Hey, this is Maritza from EasyOnlineMarketing.com, and you're listening to one of my favorite shows, The Hero Theory with Mike Murphy.
Welcome to The Hero Theory with your host, Mike Murphy. We're killing excuses, firing up your finances, and building badass bodies so you can become your own hero. And now, here's your host, Mike Murphy.
All right, heroes, on this episode of The Hero Theory, I've got an old friend I've dug up from the dark ages. Sorry, man. Please welcome Brian McLeod.
Rawr!
From the old, from deep down in the tar pits, I emerge. Awesome, Mike. Thanks for having me on, buddy. I'm excited about this, and I love your podcast. I'm really enjoying listening to it. I rediscovered yesterday too. So awesome. Glad we could connect.
Yeah, great. Now I originally knew you, Brian, as a copywriter, and the sort of pre-call before this, we covered a whole bunch more stuff. So this call, we'll go definitely beyond copy, but just for a sec, let's take a quick minute and just go back and kind of introduce who you are and kind of where you've come from.
Sure, thanks. Well, I mean, most people tend to know me from the copywriting world. I tend to, number one, I am a direct response copywriter and have been for a very long time, but lately, for the last few years, a lot of my work has been with a lot of the, most respected copywriters and helping them publish their training and working with them behind the scenes on a lot of the, infrastructure and sales strategy and things like that. My partner is David Garfinkel, who many think of as the greatest copywriting coach ever, in the world right now, which I tend to agree with. So David Garfinkel and I do a monthly live training every month, and certainly that puts me in the copy frame of mind for a lot of people. But I've been involved in web business since there was a web to do business on, since before there was a web, frankly. I was on AOL back in 1994, and CompuServe and Prodigy and all of those dial-up online services. I remember it was very exciting to get the gateway to the World Wide Web instead of, what did they call it back then? It was not, Gopher or something was like this pseudo web thing that almost became something. And we used Usenet a lot, like Rec Audio Pro, where you'd go in there and argue with the audio engineers about which, mics sound horrible and which preamps you have to have and why you would spend $7,000 on a Neve 1073 and, you know what I mean? All the stuff that you would do on the internet back in those days. So yeah, I mean, to me, the internet is just an incredible playground of possibility.
Yeah. So now we've cleared up. We're both really old. So that's awesome.
Yeah. We're very old people for all the 20 somethings. We're old, but we're cool.
That's right. Cause we're both rock stars.
Right. Being a guitar player and a rock band gets me a extended cool pass for a few more years than normal, but I am officially in the old dude category. I turned 44 this year, which frightens me to hear those words come out of my mouth.
Yeah. I turned 40 last week and I'm not taking it very well, but that's all good. I don't act 40 anyway.
Just don't die and watch what happens. You'll be 44 like that.
That's right. I can only hope.
Right.
So let's go back into the copy just for one sec,
sure,
because that's something that I have a huge interest in. I'm not a copywriter by any means. I would never tarnish the name that way, but I love to write. I've always been a writer. And I am fascinated by the art and science of copywriting. So maybe just take a second and tell the listener what copywriting is. It's not the protection of a good. That's not the copyright we mean.
Right. Sure. Let's take it all the way back to the top. Copywriting is writing advertising, writing the words and the pitch that you read, see, or hear in advertisements. It's not about intellectual property like getting a copyright or a patent or a trademark or something. It's about writing advertisements. And I think you'll find that the people that marketers get most excited to learn from, the people who seem to have all of it dialed in the best, tend to be copywriters, because we are holistic thinkers. We're after an action. We are trying to get singular activity out of one person. We're having a one-to-one conversation with a whole lot of people at the same time, as opposed to trying to send a message out that's one person to many people. We're trying to talk to each person individually. We're just having that conversation simultaneously through television or a newspaper ad or something that you get in your mailbox. And so that's what copywriting is. And, you know, it's really a mathematical thing more than anything else. Sure, it's creative and it's writing, but it's about metrics and testing and knowing your numbers. The idea behind copywriting is to get people to take a specific action, like pick up the phone and call your company to get a new $39.95 cleaning check on your air conditioner, or to fill out this form and return it for a free whatever, or click this button to order right now. All of those things are the action that the copywriter wants the prospect or the reader to take. And there is a science and a craft involved in being able to predictably and reliably get the best results for getting people to do that. And that's what people pay us a premium to know how to do.
Yeah, and you mentioned something in there that I want to come back and touch on, is the sort of measuring the metrics of good copy. Because I had a client that we wrote copy for them, and they took a read through it. And these guys weren't marketers at all, but they kind of read through it, and they're like, "Oh man, that copy sucks." I'm like, "Really? Right. How do you know that?"
Right. Well, the only copy that sucks is copy that tested and performed poorly. If it hasn't been tested, that's purely conjecture and opinion. Although a skilled copywriter can generally be expected to be right more often than they're wrong, and certainly more often than a layperson. But sure, at the end of the day, we're all guessing until the public votes with their wallet or with the action that you want them to take. It either works or it doesn't work. If it works, it's good copy. If it doesn't work, it's bad.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was hoping to hear, because this had not seen one lick of traffic.
Yeah. Then that's just silly. I mean, but that's very common too, Mike. You know, I mean, it seems silly when you are, David likes to say that, you know, people cannot see beyond their level of experience. So of course they couldn't possibly understand, given where they are in the process, that's a foolish way to operate, right? They're going on instinct and emotion and their own experience, or what they personally like. Like, "I personally would never buy from this ad." Well, it doesn't matter what you personally would do unless you are every prospect, you know, and chances are very good that we are not our ideal prospect in whatever business we're in. The way that we prefer to buy things often is a big stumbling block for people to be able to sell products to people the way that their customers actually prefer to buy things.
For sure, yeah. It was good to see, though, because they, you know, like I said, it hadn't even had a chance to perform. And what caught them up was that the copywriter wrote it at, I guess, a lesser level than what they are used to reading. These were both university educated guys.
Oh, they got turned off by the simple language and they wanted more big words and to make it impressive sounding.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the grammar police come in and they complain that, you know, why each of these paragraphs are one or two sentences long.
Yeah.
And the sentence only has six words in it. Like, that's wrong. No, actually, that's exactly right. I mean, in copy, You're trying to write at a fifth or sixth, maybe a seventh grade level, not because your prospect is stupid, but because it's easier for the brain to consume this information. The simpler concepts and simpler words flow into the mind easier. You don't get stumbled up. You don't lose the momentum in the reading through a big word that throws someone for a loop, or that suddenly they're stuck on, "I wonder how you pronounce that word. Do you pronounce it like this?" So you've lost the reader at that point. You've lost your sales momentum, triggering them with that. Or the word triggers a thought that sends them off on a thing like, "Wow, I haven't heard that word since my, you know, junior year college professor said it. Boy, he was a jerk. I hated that guy. Yeah, I wonder whatever happened to Mary McGillicuddy. She was so hot." They are not any longer in your sales presentation. They are off on a mental journey that the words took them on. So yeah, it's not useful to try and impress your readers with your vocabulary. It's a lot harder to get that message across simply and easy to understand and quick and easy to consume.
For sure, yeah. So Now, a lot of
we just bored a lot of people. I know there's already people like, yeah, this copy thing is boring me already.
Yeah. Don't worry. There's a spin to this. I'm going somewhere with it. I'm leading them down a path, right?
Right.
No, because I think it's fascinating because a lot of marketers, a lot of people that listen to this podcast are going to be online marketers.
Sure.
Or maybe they want to be online marketers or business people themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that happens is you get on, you know, you put up your website or whatever, and there's got to be copy somewhere, whether it's a long form.
You know, it's all copy.
Yeah.
Everything's copy.
Yeah, whether it's a long form sales letter or your emails or whatever. Now there's like little like I use lead pages and there's little short copy, little opt-in boxes or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And the words on the button, that's copy.
Sure.
Offer at the top of the form that says, you know, put your name and your email in here. That's copy. And all of that stuff is tested. In the world of copywriting, on the high end, you know, the smartest marketers are so fanatical and so smart about what they're doing that's the kind of degree of testing that they're doing is changing the wording and testing the variation between the same exact web page, but the only difference will be the words on the button. And they'll test that. 50% of the traffic goes to one page and 50% goes to the other. And then the testing software or whatever they're using will indicate to them which one is performing better. And that becomes what we call a control.
Right.
That's now the reliable, predictable result. And so you're always trying to beat the control. Like, all right, well, if that works at 32%, let me see if I put an exclamation point. Maybe I can bump that to 35%. Ah, it's working. Great. Now the control is at 35%. Maybe if I added a different color, oh, it's at 42%. Well, now you went from 32% to 42%, a 10% increase just by tweaking those tiny little variables.
Right.
That sounds extraordinarily and excruciatingly boring to most people because it's not the exciting part of the business, but I got news for you. That's the profitable part of the
business. Well, yeah, because, you know, earlier before this call, we were talking about, you know, when somebody has a job and they want to make more money,
mm-hmm.
Maybe you get like a cost of living increase or whatever, but it can be tough in a regular 9-to-5 job, and I'm not hacking jobs, but it can be tough to get a big bump, right? And you may have to go beg, plead, whatever, put in X many years. But if you've got we'll put this really simply. Let's say you have the two pages and you're selling a product for $10. And like Brian has said, you put up the one page. You start with two, right? You put up the two pages, see which one does better. And then you just make one little change. And next thing you know, you're
– keep testing.
Yeah, you just keep testing. And then that product, instead of selling one a day, goes to selling two a day. Well, you just doubled your money.
Yeah, it's like it's sort of like a set of stairs, right? Like
yep.
Start at the bottom, and your control's okay. Your control's now on the fourth stair. You're not going back down to the third, second, or first stair anymore. You're just trying to get higher up the stairs. So you keep testing against your control, and oop, this one hopped another three stairs, and it hopped another two stairs, and so you can't really. The worst it can do is get trounced by the control. Well, now you know. Okay, well, that didn't work. You know, and I think, you know, in general, what separates the successful marketers from those who struggle is the people who test and look at – let the data make their decisions, not their emotions, right? Like they don't decide I like this or don't like this or my customers will or won't like this. Those are bad – factors for making decisions. You know, we ran the numbers, we've looked at the data for a year and we've discovered that X, that's a good decision that you're making because it's unemotional, it's just based on the data. And then it's very easy to know what to do, Mike. You know, the interesting thing about doing that is it frees you from all of that angst. Like I don't care how good you are at marketing or copy or whatever. We all feel the pressure like, geez, I don't know what to do. Should I do it this way or the other way? I don't know. Data frees you from all of that. The data tells you what to do. You know, it doesn't lie. The numbers don't lie is the old cliche. Well, you know, when you have the statistics that you only get from measuring and testing what you're doing, you don't have to feel the angst or anxiety about what direction you need to be going with your marketing. It tells you what to do. And then it's just a matter of trying to scale it up and get it, you know, get more of what you're after for less money.
Yeah. So the listener that no matter where they are, but they're a little bit curious about copy or they wouldn't be on this call, what's a good way for somebody to get at least get acquainted? I'm not saying turn them into a star copywriter, but at least get acquainted with the basics of copy.
Well, you know, two things. There's two things I would recommend. Number one, the Gary Halbert letter, which is thegaryhalbertletter.com, thegaryhalbertletter.com. Gary Halbert was, I consider sort of a patron saint of all entrepreneurs and copywriters. Gary passed away in 2007, I think it was. I'm still very good friends with his sons, Bond and Kevin. And I consider that to be like sort of the Smithsonian of copywriting on the internet. And it's not a fancy schmancy website. What you're after is the timeless wisdom and the exceptionally charming writing. As you just go through the old issues of the Gary Halbert letter newsletter, you'll read through these, and you'll be fascinated by the stories. You'll be pulled in by the copy that he writes. And most importantly, through these engaging stories, he's an absolutely fantastic teacher through the allegory and stories that he tells of showing you and demonstrating the lessons that he's imparting. It's not like, hey, today we're going to talk about lesson one, and by the time we're done, you're going to know X, Y, Z. There's none of that. He's just telling you a story. Hey, you know, I was down at the so-and-so today, and I was talking to this lady, and she told me blah, blah, blah. And by the time you're done with that issue, you're like, oh, I got it. He taught me the difference about closing the sale and not closing the sale. But he did it through telling you stories, which is very, the very human. Telling stories is not something you have to set out to consciously do. We all do it every day. I mean, when you come home from a bad day at work and you throw your keys on the table, and you're like, hi, honey, man, what a day, dot, dot, dot. Perfect yeah. opener for a sales letter, right? Isn't that a yeah. great? It's a great man. What a day. Dot dot dot. I got to hear more. Tell. What do you mean? What a day? That sounds bad. What happened? We're fascinated to know more. And I mean, the cavemen came back from the hunt to the cave. And then they take the chalk and write on the thing. You know, the buffaloes were around the corner, and I got chased by a crocodile. That we've been telling stories as long as we've been communicating. And so story number one is important. And there's a great book that you can buy on Amazon for like $10 called Cashvertising, CashVertising, Cashvertising. I think I spelled that right. It's by a guy named Drew Eric Whitman, Whitman. And it's a really fun, really light read. It's not like a big textbook. It's a skinny little fun, funny book. But it's a lot of really powerful insider secrets from guys like me and guys who work at advertising agencies all over the world that know, you know, how all this stuff works and why you have to think of things in certain ways. Like, for example, there's a great story in there about soap. And, you know, the owner didn't want to talk about the smell of the soap. They wanted to talk about whatever it was that they felt made their soap unique, which was extraordinarily boring. Like, you know, the special emollients and the blah, blah, blah. Nobody cares about that. The copywriter was smart enough to understand that they needed to paint a mental picture vividly of this amazing citrus orange smell as you lathered up the soap. It just this smell of citrus just enveloped your nose, and you're just like, wow, this is so amazing. That's what makes people want to buy your soap, not because you have this special emollient, you know?
Yeah.
And so things like that can be a mystery to business owners and people who are not hip to copy. And it's a really fun little afternoon read. You could sit down in a hammock on a Sunday afternoon with a glass of iced tea and be done by the time you were ready to be done. And it will teach you a lot. You'll come away from that knowing more about marketing and copy than probably 80% of the civilized world.
Yeah, so I think that's a super good tip. So
Cashvertising, one more time, Cashvertising. One more.
Yeah, I'll put the link in the show notes to that.
Yeah, great guy. Drew Eric Whitman's a really cool guy, too. I made friends with him on Skype a few years back. Twitter.
Yeah.
And very friendly guy and really good advice. One of my favorite copy books, and it's a cheapie. It's $10 on Amazon.
Cool. Yeah, I've been through the Gary Halbert letter and made friends with Bond as well.
That's, yeah.
Like I said, I'm just fascinated by it because if you take – like if you take a sales letter or a piece of copy or whatever that you're writing for one of your own products mm-hmm. or affiliate product or whatever, and you send it to an actual quote unquote real copywriter and have them tweak it, if they don't just throw it in the garbage and start over, what right. comes back is usually magical, I think.
Right. It's mind blown because you didn't realize you're what whatever it is you're into could be that persuasive. And,
yeah.
And that's really what we do. That's what a copywriter does is make the very best, most fascinating case for why someone should emotionally and rationally and logically agree to do what you want them to do.
Yeah. Like I had a coach that was, he wasn't a copywriter per se, but he was very, very good at writing copy and had studied all the greats. Mm-hmm. He just didn't, that wasn't his main thing. And, you know, he would ask me to write my own stuff and then he would just make sort of tweaks and suggestions and he'd only change a line or two here and there and it'd be like night and day difference.
Oh yeah.
I like, mean, well, how the hell did you do that?
Flipping a
man?
Few words in a headline can change the meaning entirely.
Yeah.
And make all the difference in the world. That's why split testing is so important. You know, John Carlton likes to say that your headline should be dialed in so tight that it literally you can't change a single word or even a comma without completely changing the context of the headline. That's how tight you should, you know, get it down. And I think that's really what separates copywriters, you know, pros from amateurs or from people who are just mildly interested or fascinated by it is the degree of work and editing and refinement that pros go through to get down to that magical quality that you were talking about.
Yeah.
Where most will just kind of throw something up and see what happens. And there's value in that too, don't get me wrong. But the blockbuster copy, the stuff that becomes a legend, it's because of that refinement, that constant going back over it and sanding it smooth and polishing it until you've really dialed in what you're trying to say in the most powerful way. And that takes time. And that's why copywriters are expensive. You know, it takes an awful lot of time to write something that simple.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad you mentioned that too, because I want to sort of drive home to people that they're, you know, I'd like to invite people to give it a go and at least, you know, learn to manipulate their own words, but never underestimate the power of good copy.
Yeah. And well, you know, the thing is the idea of writing copy for most business owners, and I train tons, and all, you know, I mean, a lot of my products are specifically for entrepreneurs and busy business owners who don't want to be copywriters, but they're smart enough to know that it is the thing that separates the winners from the losers. In the marketplace. So they hate it from the sense that the last thing they feel like ever doing is opening up a blank Word document and staring at the blinking cursor, you know, like, oh God.
Yeah.
Copywriting in general falls somewhere on the spectrum between like a, you know, a do-it-yourself root canal and a tax audit. You know, somewhere right in between there is how much people love writing copy. So anything, you know, you can do to remove some of the angst about it and make it easier is generally a good thing. And that's why I suggest to business owners all the time that that's where they should spend their time is focused on learning the copy side of the business and, you know, the persuasion side of things, because that's where all the money comes from, is getting more people to do what you want them to do. It's not manipulation. It's simply figuring out who you're most ideal prospect is, what's most important to them, and communicating your greater value in the marketplace than your competitors. Whoever can more clearly and more concisely communicate their greater value in the market is going to be the leader in that marketplace. So it's not rocket science. It's a pretty simple construct, but like anything, it's simple, but it's not easy.
Yeah, for sure. Now, the focus of the hero theory here, like we said at the start, is basically to show people what's available out there for them and how they can, I guess, sort of direct their lives in ways that they may not have considered.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about sort of, I guess, your path. Like, were there some spots where you struggled in the past and
There's stuff I struggle with right now. You know, I'll tell you my most recent struggle. Maybe that's useful for folks. I just moved up here to Tampa Bay from Miami. I'm born and raised in Miami. I've lived a lot of different places in my life, but born and raised and spent most of my life living in South Florida in Miami. Well, would you just like 3 weeks ago, I pulled up roots and moved my family, my wife and child and I, and moved us up here to Tampa Bay. And one of the things that I'm struggling with now is having to completely recreate all of my processes, right? Anytime you change your surrounding like this, it's a complete pattern interrupt. And all of the patterns and rituals and things that we just do on a daily basis, the behaviors we constantly exhibit, get short-circuited. So I'm still trying to figure out how to function really in this new environment. I mean, my MacBook Pro looks the same no matter where I'm sitting, right? That part hasn't changed. But where I'm sitting as I'm doing it and all of the everything else around it is still completely different. And I'm just constantly every day trying to find a box with something in it that I used to have, or where's my book on this, or all of that kind of stuff. Very mundane things. But, you know, that's what makes the difference in our effectiveness on a daily basis, is sometimes the little stuff, like having an ergonomic chair versus a piece of crap desk chair that you bought at Staples that you never really liked.
Yeah.
One of them you love sitting in and one of them you hate sitting in. Which do you think you're going to do better work in, you know?
Yeah, and that sort of disruption of your flow can be really big for some people, right? I mean, I know people that you can chuck them on a park bench and they'll be just fine.
Yeah, my friend Eric's like that. My friend Eric Stafford, great designer. Eric can go sit out there with his toes in the sand in Cape Coral, you know, go to Fort Myers Beach or Sanibel or one of these little beaches and just plop down with his iPad and work. Loves to do it, does it constantly. I could never get anything done that way, never in a million years.
Yeah, that's how I am too. I mean, same here at our house. My wife can do the desk piled up with crap, or she's going to kill me if she hears me say that.
we'll edit this part out.
Yeah, that's right. But things just don't affect her. She can block it out. Like, you know, in college or university, she could work in any environment and get her study on, where I'd have to have earplugs and then earmuffs over the earplugs and then a hood over that. And like, nobody talk to me. I don't need anybody around me. And it's still like that. I need a specific environment to get my stuff done. So I can relate to that, sort of struggle.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people go through it. They get stuck in their patterns and then they can't get out of them. But once you get out of them, or you break those patterns, then you have to invent new ones.
Now, yeah.
You know, it's important that you pick the stuff that's really going to lead you to where you want to go, and not just back to the comfort of what you've always known or the way you've always done it. Like, I know that I should be doing different things in the very beginning in the morning rather than checking my stats and logging into the back office of stuff. Like, the stats aren't going to change from what they are. So I don't really need to see those things the very first thing I do when I turn on my computer, right? I could go do something else, then check the stats. There's like, I can't magically transform them. So do I need to know that first? And why I say that is I can fall down a rabbit hole very easily and lose an hour or two going, oh, what's going on with this? Well, let me look at this. Before you know it, I'm off on a chasing an optimization issue or trying to figure out what's going on. And I'm not doing a core pillar activity that builds my business or moves it forward or markets me in some positive way first thing in the day, which is a very smart way to start your day every day. It's just the first thing you knock out is one core thing. It doesn't even have to be a big thing, but just one thing that's new that moves you closer to where you're trying to get and to the goals that you're working on. Do that first before you do anything else, and then let the rest of the day happen, because it's going to happen anyway. It is what it is. The email sitting in your inbox unchecked isn't going to change whether you check it first or you check it second, right?
Yeah.
The only thing that's going to happen is you're going to get screwed out of going and doing the good thing that you need to do for you by whatever it was that captured your fascination at that minute. So that's a pattern interrupt. Those are the kinds of little patterns and things that we can do to boost our productivity, how we feel about the day. Because you know what? If I knock out some video that I need to you know, finalize, or do something that I need to do in the morning, and I do that before I do anything else, that colors the rest of my day in a very favorable and positive way. I feel more powerful. I feel more accomplished. I feel like I got my stuff done that I wanted to do. So now the rest of the day is gravy, so to speak. You know what I mean? You just approach the rest of your day with a much better attitude or filter on. And that's just a huge tip that I've been given over the years of multiple times by multiple smart people. Eben Pagan's taught it a lot, and he's one of many, but he does a really good job of teaching the value of that. And I think it's one of the core things that people, no matter what you're into, business-wise, marketing or otherwise, that one core activity first thing in the day for you, that's your – I mean, it's like in business, pay yourself first is the old philosophy, right? always pay yourself first. Well, that's sort of like what we're talking about. Pay yourself first in terms of what you need to get done so that you feel like, wow, I kicked butt today. I did this thing. It's already done and I'm moving forward instead of getting robbed by your old routines. Oh, you got on Facebook. Now you're laughing about the funny video and you're joking around and 2 hours skips by just from, you know, whatever happened before you get back to that activity. And now you're scrambling and now you're irritable because you're behind the eight ball a little bit. And, oh my God, it's already lunchtime and I haven't gotten anything done. And you start, you know, being snippy with people or, you know what I mean? You start snippy with yourself. Like, oh, again, I can't believe I wasted my day today again. You start beating yourself up and you become less effective.
Well, that's actually the number one tip that gets shared by everybody that's been on the podcast so far.
Is what?
Believe it or not.
Do
the one thing.
Well, it's the most universal productivity enhancing thing you can do for your business because, again, you're paying yourself first. The rest of your life is going to be what it is regardless of you doing the thing or not doing the thing. So you might as well go ahead and do the thing and then deal with whatever is real.
Yeah, and it can even be, for some folks, hitting the gym first thing in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be marketing. It doesn't have to be about business. You know, going to the gym first thing in the morning or going for a run or, you know, whatever. Spending time having breakfast with your kids before they go to school.
Yep.
Instead of, checking your email and then, oh, damn, they pulled away and they already went to school and never got to say goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah, super powerful. So one other thing that we could cover here was that you and I are both, for lack of a better word, nerds.
Yes.
Right? We're super into
– I am happy to say that I am I am an advanced geek.
Yeah. I mean, we're into the gadgets, the platforms and tools and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I guess if you could pick, let's say, two tools or platforms or programs or whatever that are – sort of right now, super powerful to you, what would they be?
Well, I think, you're listening to one now, which is podcasting. I think we are at a upward surge of people paying attention and enjoying podcasting and listening to all the many good podcasts that there are and more new ones coming out all the time. I know some people feel like there's a glut of them. That just means be more choosy, you know, dial it in tighter and get the ones that really are giving you the value that you want. But it's a great opportunity to connect with your audience in a way that is, you know, we were talking about this at the beginning of the call, Mike, before we hit the button. And that's this human connection that happens at live events or when you're meeting directly face to face with a client, customer, partner, what have you. The layer of abstraction from the internet gets in the way of that. And podcasting kind of lets that human element back in. They hear you, you're talking, it's a casual conversation. It really changes the dynamic compared to, an ad in the newspaper or a spot on television or something that comes in your mailbox. You don't feel very, attached to those things, but you can quickly get attached to your favorite podcast host. Right? Like, man, I just love that guy. He's so much fun to listen to. I have a great time listening to these. I load him up and then I listen to him while I work out every day. And I hope he keeps doing it because I'm having a great time listening to these. You've got a really powerful bond with that person through the podcast that you don't get from an email list of subscribers, for example, or sending mail in their mailbox or whatever it is you do to reach people in your business. So I would encourage people to think about either going on podcasts, like I'm joining you as a guest and talk about what you do, or host one, create one. The tools have never been easier to make it simpler to do.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's one. The other is getting out of your comfort zone and going to meet with people, getting out there and pressing the flesh. There's something magical that happens when you have a meal together with somebody or a drink or a cup of coffee. It removes a barrier somehow that we all tend to have. And I just can't tell you, I mean, virtually all of the significant business developments in my life that have led to successes and victories and an awful lot of business getting conducted, I can trace them back to a handshake or a meal or, you know what I mean? Some kind of human interaction, meeting them at a live conference or, you know, meeting them at their office or going and having a meal together or whatever the case may be. I would encourage you to do more of that this year. Do more to get out in front of your prospect and talk to them directly and let them talk to you. You know what? They're fascinating people to listen to. If you can be a good listener and just, you know, learn to shut up and let people tell you stuff, you can find some fascinating new ideas that you never would have had.
Yeah, and I think that's everybody that I've met at a live event, almost everybody I've remained friends with.
Yeah.
Right. Because like you said earlier, I think it was before the call that you, you know, you form this bond with them. We've got a lot in common with the, I mean, the events you and I were talking about were business events, online business events.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got that bond with them. And yeah, they become really good friends with a lot of people that way.
That's right. Well, let's say you sell insurance. You know, you're an insurance salesman. I'll bet you dollars to donuts there's a function or a local business group or something that you could go once a month and just, you know, connect with a bunch of other people who are of like mind. And yeah, if you made one friend out of that group that like you just clicked, right? And you're like, oh man, that guy's great. And that's incredibly valuable and incredibly life sustaining in our business, you know, to meet new people and spark ideas and who knows where those relationships can take you. But I can tell you that almost every significant business relationship for me has involved a face-to-face human-to-human connection that you need to go out and cultivate.
Yeah, for sure. I think a good thing to do would be, you know, you and I will be in touch after this call, of course, but if you share any live events that you know are coming up, anybody that's listening to this call, if you go back to herotheory.com and just opt in, you'll get a book I call The Hero Manifesto.
Mm.
And I'll just let you know of live events coming up because that's how I find out about them. Usually isn't online. It's because somebody has said, hey, by the way, there's this event coming up in Florida.
Yeah, hey, I'm going to so-and-so. You going? You know, I'm going to JVZoo's Marketing Mayhem in yeah, August. Are you going? That's how it starts. And you're like, oh, I didn't know it was going. When is it? Oh, it's August. Well, I don't know. Who else is going? Blah, blah, yeah, blah. Oh, it sounds great. Then suddenly when they tell the story to somebody else, they're like, oh, by the way, yeah, I talked to Mike. Mike's going.
Yeah.
And then other people, oh, Mike's going? Oh, okay, great. Yeah, I want to go. And then, you know, you have a great time. You meet the people that you don't get to see regularly. You get really re-energized and refocused.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so I'm sure we'll meet up at a live event and we'll get some of the listeners from this call. Come on out and meet us up. And,
you bet. Or create your own. Time. You know, don't be shy about creating your own, too. It's a lot easier than a lot of people would like you to know.
Yeah, for sure.
To be able to create, especially a small event, if you're not trying to put hundreds of people in the room, if you want 5 or 10 people to come, you know, meet and discuss, that's virtually impossible to screw up if you just take the initiative. I mean, yeah, really, the only thing that stops that from happening is the fear of, I'll look like an idiot. I don't want to look like an idiot. I don't want to be humiliated. I don't want to look foolish, which
I do them in,
you know, that's a big fear, but it's just a phantom illusion. It's not real. If you
get
past
that,
anybody, I mean, anybody can get 5 or 10 people to show up to something.
Yeah. I love doing the little events like that.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. Brian, it's been super good having you on here, man. You've shared a lot of stuff.
Well, I appreciate it, Mike. It's great to connect again. I'm having a great time doing interviews a lot lately. That's my thing, you know, right now. I just felt like I needed to get out and just do a bunch of talks with a bunch of new audiences, a bunch of new people, and reinvigorate that whole side of things. I haven't done this kind of thing since I stopped doing my live show every week.
Yeah, right.
So thanks for letting me blow the rust off of the strings there and play a little bit.
For sure. Now, where can people find you online if they want to link up and learn more about you?
Thanks, man. I think the best place to get me is probably Facebook. You know, just go to facebook.com/BrianMcLeod, BrianMcLeod. Again, Brian McLeod, BrianMcLeod. And yeah, if you could just go to Facebook, I love connecting with people there and talking to them about what's going on with their business wherever I can. I can't always answer, you know, complicated questions. Sometimes people write me their life story, you know, Warren.
Yes.
They, you know, like I just can't. I don't have the time always to reply. I do my best, but don't feel bad if I don't get back to you right away. It usually just means I'm busy that week, and I'll get back in touch soon.
Sounds good. I'll put that link in the show notes as well.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I love it.
Easy to access.
Yeah, right. I love doing it. I can't wait to hear some more of your interviews, Mike, and hear more about what you're doing. You know, I've been seeing you popping up in a lot of my mutual circles of influence and different friends, you know. But I thought it was kind of funny. Brad Spencer, good friend of mine, Brad recommended that we get to know each other. I'm like, dude, I think I've known Mike longer than I've known you, Spencer.
You definitely have, yeah. Yeah, so I was like, hey, what's going on here?
Right, what's up with that, Footins?
The power of the internet.
Right on. And you know what? That's the greatest advice I can give anybody is just be cool and make friends with people. Don't put a lot of attachment onto it. Just, you know what I mean? Like, don't put an expectation on every person that you meet that there's going to be some kind of gain or right away I got to do something for you or you got to do something for me. Make some friends and the rest of it will take care of itself, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, awesome, Mike. Thank you for having me, dude. I appreciate it. I had a good time. I hope I didn't bore everyone to death with the copy talk. That's, you know, that's like...
Nope. they got to learn it, man. So, like I said, leave some comments below. This will be posted on the site. Leave comments if you got them.
Hang out in the comments, too. If you guys have questions or comments about anything we talked about, I'll be sure to stay vigilant with it and try and answer your questions right here in the comments on this blog right here.
Sounds good, man.
Awesome, Mike. Well, thanks, dude.
Right on. Take care, Brian.
Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Hero Theory. I hope you enjoyed it and were able to pull out some gold nuggets that you can leverage in your own life. Remember to head on over to herotheory.com and grab yourself a copy of The Hero Manifesto. Be sure to review Hero Theory on iTunes so I can deliver exactly what you need to live your hero life. Until we meet again, stand up, stand out, and become your own hero.